Voice program. I'm your host, Rich Templin. First, let me remind you, as the FCC requires, that the opinions you're about to hear belong solely to those sharing them, do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, and or license holder of WVFS Tallahassee. Now, we start out tonight's show with a quick non-political segment with our good friend Ken Kay, president of the Tallahassee Astronomical Society and the Sky Guy columnist for the Tallahassee Democrat. We tried to have Ken on last week, but some technology kept us down. So, Ken, you with us?
I'm here.
Hey, fantastic. Isn't it amazing when things work in non-commercial experimental college radio? All right, Ken. So there was a lot of cool stuff happening in the skies over Tallahassee last week. We wanted to have you on to talk about it. We did promote that you were spending some time out at Lake Ellis showing folks what was going on. What happened last week, and what's on tap for the month ahead?
Well, there was a conjunction of three planets, Mercury, Venus, and Jupiter, and it's actually still going on, but Jupiter has faded sort of into the glare of the sun. But if folks get out at, shortly after sunset to a half hour to an hour after sunset and have a clear view of the west, they'll see a really, really, really bright star, and that bright star is Venus. And then just above Venus will be a faint star. As the sky darkens, of course, it'll pop out, and that's Mercury. And Mercury's making a wonderful visit to us. It gets pretty high in the sky for us, which it normally doesn't do. Mercury doesn't get very far from the sun. So there's an opportunity for folks to see both Venus and Mercury. And from night to night, they will change positions and eventually be next to each other. Sometime in June, if you just kind of watch, you'll see them pass each other.
Cool deal. What else is coming up? Now, I know, because I do get your emails, the ISS, the International Space Station, is making a favorable pass over the city tonight.
It is. Unfortunately, it's cloudy, but you never know. By 10, it'll be visible starting at 10:22 p.m. It'll come out of the southwest and pass 60-some degrees above the horizon. So it'll make a decent pass and then fade out into the northeast at, I think it's about an 8-minute pass. So,
now,
the
first time that I actually went out and looked for the ISS passing overhead, it was really quite amazing because it's a lot brighter than I think people might realize what they might be thinking it's going to be. And so it's almost, as bright as an airplane passing overhead. But when you realize that you're actually watching it go completely across the sky, in other words, from horizon to horizon, almost seeing a circular shape to its path, to its trajectory, it's pretty amazing.
Well, and to think that it's as big as a football field and it's traveling 17,500 miles per hour, and there's a bunch of astronauts in it. It's kind of neat. Yeah, I agree. But really what's dominating the sky, not in the sense of brightness, but just pleasure, is the planet Saturn. It's well placed. The rings are tilted nicely, and we've been having great viewings at Lake Ella. I call it the wow factor. People who have not looked at it through a telescope will come up, put their eye to the eyepiece, and they'll go, "Wow, you got that painted on there. That's not real." So
now for the amateur backyard astronomer, what are they looking for to be able to pinpoint Saturn?
Well, it's to the southeast. It's about 45 degrees up. It's kind of yellowish when the sun sets. But we use a trick using the handle of the Big Dipper. If you follow the arc of the Big Dipper, it arcs over to a bright star called Arcturus, which is almost straight up. And then if you follow that arc, it curves over and spikes over to a star called Spica, which is the brightest star in Virgo. And then once you find Spica, to the left of Spica, Spica is sort of a bluish-white star. And to the left, or going to the east, you'll see Saturn. So, but once you see it, you'll know it. It's a wonder. I mean, it got me hooked on astronomy. I think you'd probably get a bunch of people hooked on it, too, if they do it. But anyway, on the 10th, the thin crescent moon will be towards Mercury and Venus, so you'll get a trifecta in the west. You can see both Venus, Mercury, and the moon. Now, Mercury and Venus both go through phases. Mercury goes very quickly, so it'll go through phases a lot faster than Venus, because as it comes around the sun, it's like a fully illuminated globe. But then when it reaches its peak and starts turning back around to come between the Earth and the sun, it becomes like what most people call a half moon. It's a quarter moon because you're only looking at a quarter of it illuminated. And then as it comes back down between the Earth and the sun, it becomes a crescent. So it goes through phases just like the moon. So that's kind of fun. Our TASS meeting, if anybody's interested in joining us, is on the 17th. That's at 6:30 p.m. at the Challenger Learning Center. And then, if you want to find Saturn on the 17th, between the 17th and the 18th, it'll be first to the right of Saturn, and then on the 18th, it'll be to the left. So it'll go back underneath both Spica and Saturn. So the 17th and the 18th would be an opportunity. You know, just try to find the moon, and if you find a bluish-white star, that's Spica, and then a kind of yellowish star, that'll be Saturn.
All right. Very cool. Now, you guys also have a great website, an email list that is actually particularly beneficial. How can folks find that?
Well, if they go to stargazers.org, that's all one word, stargazers.org, that'll bring them to our webpage, which is hosted by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and the Astronomy Society of the Pacific. It's a great webpage. It's not just, you know, our task, but JPL has great resources for anybody who's interested. And we have an event calendar, and if you need to contact us, there's a number of coordinators right there on the homepage, and you can just click on it and send us an email. We'd be happy to respond.
All right, Ken Kay, Tallahassee Democrat columnist. He's known as the Sky Guy, also president of the Tallahassee Astronomical Society. We have him on once a month to tell us what's going to be happening in the skies overhead. Ken, thanks for joining us. Sorry again about last week's mishap, but glad we were able to have you on tonight.
I appreciate it, Rich. Thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you next month.
You got it. Bye-bye.
All right. Now, when we come back, the search for comprehensive immigration reform has been one of the longest running and most difficult political battles for decades since the last major immigration legislation passed in 1986. Now, President Obama made it a priority in 2008 and again during his reelection campaign last year. But Congress has had a difficult time finding the political will necessary to stand up to many of the xenophobic voices in our country. Now, however, after the 2012 election results and the emerging new electoral power of the Hispanic and Latino communities, coupled with the interests of big business in a shifting labor market, the political stars seem aligned. And as the Senate returns to work today, there is a palpable mood that something can finally get done. Now, there are many organizations pushing for comprehensive immigration reform, as well as an incredible grassroots effort out there. And one of the groups that is helping to lead this mobilization is organized labor. Joining us for the rest of the program will be Jose LaLuz. He's with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. And Pablo De Leon is the senior field representative for the Southern region of the AFL-CIO, both working here in Florida to finally bring about comprehensive immigration reform. So immigration reform, when your voice continues, in just a moment.
together.
And I am down like a maze. And what I can destroy with just a hammer. And I am down like a maze. And what I can destroy with just a
All right, welcome back to the Your Voice program. So comprehensive immigration reform, it's on the horizon. We can see it. We can almost touch it. It's very close. The political stars are aligning. And one of the groups that is doing everything they can to make this a reality, finally, after a decades-long struggle, is organized labor. Joining us on the line now, one of the folks working in the state of Florida to bring about comprehensive immigration reform, Jose LaLuce with AFSCME. Jose, you with us?
Yes.
Well, first off, thank you so much for joining us. With the Senate going back in today, I know that there's a lot of activity going around on this issue. So we do appreciate you taking some time out to talk to us about it. First up, just so folks have an idea of where you're coming from, tell us a little bit about the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME.
AFSCME is the largest public service a labor organization in the country. We represent about 1.6 million public service workers throughout the country and in Puerto Rico. For us, this is an important issue because it connects with our whole legacy around the fight for civil rights. As I'm sure you know, Rich, AFSCME was, in fact, the union that led the fight of the sanitation workers in Memphis when Dr. King joined the strikers and ended up getting assassinated. He was in the midst of a fight for recognition of the sanitation workers union there in Memphis. And this fight today of immigrant workers reminds us of the fight for civil and human rights. So we are very committed to this issue.
Now, I mean, I think a lot of folks out there kind of intrinsically know, or at least they feel like they know, oh, immigration, it's a problem. Oh, we need to do something about it. But I don't think that it is discussed often enough in terms of, you know, what are the current problems? I mean, how does the current system take advantage of people? What's the impact on the economy? I mean, this is a multifaceted problem, and some of these problems are quite stark and quite severe. What do you see as some of the biggest issues with the current immigration system?
Well, essentially, the current immigration system is totally broken. There's no way to characterize it or describe it. It doesn't address, you know, the question of the 11 million men and women who are here in this country living in the shadows, who get up every morning and work in key industries, who actually, you know, pay taxes, whose sons and daughters attend, you know, the public school system and other schools. And yet, you know, these men and women do not have fundamental democratic rights, such as the right to join a union. This has an adverse impact on wages in this country because employers, you know, seize the opportunity to pick, you know, these workers against other native-born workers. The end result is a race to the bottom. And, you know, this needs to be addressed. The question of these workers, you know, who are here, who are not going to be deported. There is absolutely no way you are going to deport 11 million men and women. So we have to find a common sense solution to this. But also the question of the border and its security. remains a major concern for Americans, for all Americans, and this hasn't been addressed adequately despite the billions of dollars that have been invested in all kinds of infrastructure to protect, you know, the border. And this is one of the fundamental functions of most nation states to, you know, determine who enters, you know, the country, who stays, and to protect its borders. But, you know, we haven't been able to do that. And in addition to that, there's the question of workers who come here temporarily to perform essential, you know, work in agriculture and other industries, in high-skilled industries in Silicon Valley. And, you know, there is a need to address that. So this is a very complex issue which requires, as you mentioned, Rich, a multifaceted approach and strategy. This is why a group of eight senators, four Republicans and four Democrats came together to craft a piece of legislation that is comprehensive, not piecemeal, meaning that it addresses the full scope of you know, this of this critical issue. It has already made it through the committee, the Judiciary Committee, as you know, and it's going to hit the floor of the Senate this week. The debate is expected to be intense, but in the end, I am confident, as many other activists are, that it will be passed, and it will be passed with a decisive majority in the Senate, perhaps as many as 65 or 70 votes.
So how did, I mean, how did we, in your, you know, opinion, how did we get to this point? I mean, you know, comprehensive immigration reform has been talked about through many administrations. The Bush administration talked about it. The Clinton administration talked about it. How did we get to this point where it took so long? And we're not even there yet. What do you see as the leading forces, voices that have been resistant to making this comprehensive change?
Well, I think that there is now a broad consensus of all, you know, key forces in American society. For instance, the Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO, which is the only labor federation in this country, have come together and fashioned an agreement addressing many of, you know, the more difficult aspects of the policy that needs to be fixed. And it shows that, you know, when it comes to fixing a problem that will impact the economy in such a way that it can trigger, you know, economic, you know, prosperity for all, you know, different forces that have been adversaries in the past have come together. But I suppose, you know, this has played into the fears that are legitimate that, you know, many people have about, you know, immigrants allegedly taking jobs away from Americans in a time of economic uncertainty and economic insecurity. You know, this is the kind of fear that certain elements in society, particularly those that use demagoguery to manipulate public opinion and exacerbate, you know, tensions. It has happened historically in many other countries, in many other parts of the world. It happened in Europe. It's happened in different continents, and certainly, you know, America is not an exception. But you know, what we are witnessing now, Rich, is the coming together of different elements. That the time is now to pass immigration reform with a path to citizenship.
Now, that has been, right, I mean, one of the biggest sticking points. And there are so many different pieces to this. I want to go through and kind of just hit on some of the major points. And so let's start with that one in terms of the a path to citizenship. I mean, under this bill, we're looking at roughly 11 million undocumented Americans who are going to have a shot at becoming, you know, full-fledged citizens. It's not like they're not already doing the work of citizens. They're paying taxes. They're participating in the local economy. They're handling a lot of the responsibilities of citizenship, but they're not getting any of the benefits of citizenship. How does this bill address that issue?
Well, you know, first of all, it would, you know, regularize the status of millions of men and women, and it would create a roadmap that would allow them the option in a certain amount of certain number of years to become, you know, citizens. As you know, I mean, this is something that cannot be forced on people, but, you know, the expectation is that the majority of men and women that are now in this status would choose to do so. So it would take, in some instances, according to the bill that just you know, passed in committee, in the case of the sons and daughters of many of these immigrants, the so-called Dreamers, it may be as you know, short as you know, 5 years. Also for agricultural workers and high-skilled workers, it would take you know, longer for other immigrants. Perhaps as long as, you know, 10, 13 years. But the important thing is that once it is determined that they are eligible, that they are not criminals, that they are not people that do not deserve, you know, to attain this status, this legal status, many of them will, in fact, become legal and will be able to come out of the shadows. And that's, you know, critical and fundamental. That is perhaps the centerpiece of this legislation, the whole legalization program. And it's going to present enormous challenges to, you know, many of us, because it's going to take years, you know, to regularize, you know, the situation of many of these millions of men and women. So, then there's the question of future flows, particularly the question of temporary labor. You know, in the past, you know, there was this program called the guest worker or the bracero program, workers who came to do work here temporarily. They were brought by a certain corporation. It was some kind of almost indenture, you know, servitude, because they were tied and subordinated completely to a company. That is now going to change in terms of the language of the present bill. And these workers would have rights that would allow them to be able to organize, and this would have a positive impact on wages, which is, you know, fundamental. So those are, you know, very critical pieces of the legislation for labor unions, for unions that represent the interest of all workers and their families.
Now, how do you think, and there's been a lot of data on this. There was a widely discredited report that came out. I believe it was the Heritage Foundation talking mm-hmm. about the amazing cost that this legislation would have to the U.S. economy. But it seems to me that if you take this massive amount of labor and you take it out of the shadows, you take it from this kind of underground labor pool, and you give it status mm-hmm. and you give it legal protections, that seems like wages will begin to rise for everyone. Yeah. How do you first answer the Heritage Foundation study, and what are your thoughts on that idea of this really being an economic boom to the entire U.S. economy that we desperately need right now?
Because the evidence, is overwhelming in terms of the history of our country and other countries. In terms of the impact that this the movement of people can have if it's adequately regulated in terms of economic growth and economic prosperity, it's fundamental that these workers are able to exercise rights, the impact will be felt immediately in many industries. This report, has been widely contested, Rich, perhaps there's a suggestion that they may be racially motivated and biased. That has been part of the discussion, because there are many other reports by many other economies and economic institutes that have insisted that the impact will be immensely positive. Ray Marshall, to name one, who published a study in which he described the positive impact that immigration regulated adequately would have on economic growth and prosperity. The evidence points to the contrary, and I think that the ones that have been using these arguments are now on the losing side of this whole debate.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about regulated and such. One of the real pushbacks on immigration reform in general, and I think we're still seeing that out there right now, is this idea of enforcement and law enforcement. And I can't tell you how many guys I've seen on the talking head shows on Sunday mornings, who talk about how folks that are coming to the country undocumented are breaking the law. We can't reward people who break the law. And I mean, what else are you supposed to do when bad trade policies dry up the jobs in your home country and you've got to go find work to feed your family? But that aside, what is the enforcement going to look like in this legislation, and how are they walking that fine line between being the open nation that we think about when we think about Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty, and the idea of still having an enforceable immigration policy that is going to pull enough of these folks over to the side of supporting comprehensive immigration reform?
Well, there's been billions of dollars invested in border security. I think I saw a figure recently, $55 billion in infrastructure to enhance border protection and enforcement, and yet we have not witnessed many of these questions that allegedly needed to be addressed have been solved. I think there are some people who definitely have a bias, in terms of law enforcement and border increasing border security and putting up more fences and setting up all kinds of infrastructure. But the fact of the matter is that you have to address the question of how these workers integrate themselves fully to the economy. They are here. We're talking about men and women who are already here, like you mentioned, are contributing. They're paying taxes. They play a critical role in fundamental industries. So that, for me, is really the critical question. And of course, it would be great if the movement of people had been part of the negotiations of the North American Free Trade Agreement, these processes of economic integration, which are not should not be only about capital crossing borders and protecting the rights of investors, but the whole question of what happens to men and women who move across borders, it hasn't been addressed, and so this is one of the consequences of this. With nativism and xenophobia, we are not going to solve this. With resistance of the kind that can unleash, very repressive and ugly movements, we are not going to solve this. I mean, the examples of history are many, and they are very frightening in many countries where, these ugly, forces, were able to create havoc, preying on fear, many times legitimate fear that people have. So I think we have to have a common sense solution to this. And I think that the bill that has been crafted by the four Republicans and the four Democrats does that. Now, the question of what's going to happen in the House might be a different story, Rich.
Well, and as you well know, in this process, it is one step at a time, and every step forward is a big step. We're speaking with Jose La Luz with AFSCME about comprehensive immigration reform. Let me remind you that you're listening to WVFS Tallahassee. And Jose, I mean, obviously, I'm not unbiased here. I am a huge supporter of this issue, and it really is exciting that we're moving in the right direction, and we seem to be the pace seems to be picking up about where we need to be. But I couldn't agree more with your point that, NAFTA and some of these other, horrible trade deals and the WTO that sought to globalize profit and for these global corporations that would just move around to wherever environmental and labor policies were such that they could just maximize profit, is one of the things, at least in this hemisphere, that has led to this migration of people mm-hmm. across borders. And this is the other side of it, and yet, they've just absolutely refused to do anything about it for far too long. I think that's an excellent point that you make that does not get made enough, is that the root of so much of this is just trade, and I hope that as we get through this process, that will also create a new interest in looking at global trade policies so that all workers in the world can receive justice and dignity. You mentioned you don't know what's going to happen in the House. As someone who's working on the issue, in the trenches, what do you see happening next in the Senate? What concerns do folks on the pro comprehensive immigration reform side have? Are there any particular senators that are important to watch? Kind of handicap the political race here for us.
Yep. Well, one of the most important, of course, is Senator Rubio, who's playing a pivotal role, and so far, he's held the consensus with the other seven authors of the legislation. In Florida, as you know, Rich, there's estimated 950,000 undocumented immigrants. It is actually has the fourth largest concentration of undocumented immigrants after California, Texas, and New York. This is of particular interest to Floridians and working families in Florida. So we have to monitor carefully, Senator Rubio's role in the you know, floored a bit. His colleague on his side of the aisle, Senator Cruz from Texas, is expected to be one of the leading voices against passage. And we hear that he's got many amendments ready to be introduced to try to derail this thing. Senator Rubio, as you know, has indicated that he is interested in running for the presidency. It is no secret to anyone that the Latino vote was decisive in terms of the outcome of the most recent presidential election. That certainly was the case in Florida, in South and Central Florida. And so Floridians are going to be very much involved in this debate as they watch one of their two senators playing a key role in the overall debate.
Now, you reminded me, though, of a key point. When you talk about Florida, and I think most Floridians, when they think of elements of the undocumented workforce, they think of people and families from global South, right, from hemispheric South. So Central America, South America, Mexico, that whole region. But I mean, I've seen some numbers recently that the number of undocumented workers in this country is really a global phenomenon. I mean, there are people here that are working day in and day out that do not fit the mold of what many people in the U.S. have in terms of how they envision an undocumented worker. These are not all people from Mexico, Central America. I mean, there are folks here from all over the world. What kind of role is that playing? Are we seeing as much from the non-Hispanic and Latino community in immigration reform?
Well, we certainly are seeing a lot of energy in terms of the Haitian community there in southern Florida. You know, the question of the so-called diversity visas that usually are used by, people that migrate from different African countries is a critical issue. But you're absolutely right. There are many immigrants from, Eastern Europe, from the former Soviet Union, from the Russian, Republic and others that, and high-skilled, workers in the computer, high technology industries. It's interesting because they are letting their voices be heard in terms of phone calls and communications with different members of Congress, even though they may be as visible as some of the immigrants from the global South that you made reference to, because you remember quite well, Rich, that in the spring of 2006, millions of men and women, mostly from the global South, marched in this country, exposing themselves to be deported and many other risks to demand rights and that the system be fixed. If I have learned anything about history, is that history is made by those who choose to move themselves and move others to action. And that is why we are talking here, because we believe that it's important for not only immigrants, but other workers to engage fully in this discussion and to insist that it's important that undocumented workers have rights so that their rights can be protected. You know, it's a question of how workers as a class can protect themselves and not be pitted one against the other. therefore resulting in this race to the bottom that you and I were discussing earlier. Because the consequences of that is that we all lose. And so this is an issue not only for immigrants, it's an issue for all workers. It's a workers' rights issue. It is, in fact, a human rights issue. And with that, Rich, I'm afraid I'm going to have to excuse myself. But it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I wish that we will have other opportunities to continue this conversation.
Absolutely, Jose. Thank you so much for taking some time to speak with us. Absolute pleasure. Really appreciate it. And keep up the good work, and good luck to the work that you're doing up there right now on behalf of this very important issue. Thank you so much.
Well, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right. When we come back, we'll be joined by Pablo De Leon. He is the senior field representative for the southern region of the AFL-CIO. He is working here in Florida to talk about what's happening out there in the field from supporters of comprehensive immigration reform, and how they are looking to move ahead and exert the right political pressure, the right organizing to make sure that this does, in fact, become a reality sooner than later. And with all this talk of worker rights and justice for working people, I couldn't help myself. Here's some Dead Kennedys. We'll be back in just a few.
Right up there on the ceiling is a microphone, and we want some energy getting into it, okay? In the heart of San Francisco, Saturday night at the Def Club with the Dead Kennedys! Disco people,
time. This is a song about where you're gonna go when you get drafted, when they bring back the draft. No comedy, he says. Make a motley crew of Marines. Obey, obey, obey.
Welcome back to the Your Voice program right here on V89. Joining us on the line now, Pablo De Leon, senior field representative for the state of Florida for the AFL-CIO. Pablo, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, man. Great to hear from you. Pablo, a longtime friend and comrade. So good to have you on the program, sir. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So we had a great conversation with Jose La Luz about some of the issues and some of the policies and a little bit about the politics of it. But wanted to bring you on. You are one of the folks that's heading up the field operations here in the state of Florida for organized labor around comprehensive immigration reform. What is this campaign looking like right now? What are some of the things that organized labor in working, I know, with a massive coalition, a lot of partners, what is this looking like around the state?
Well, let me just start by saying that, we're really working together with different organizations that have been working in immigration for a very long time, and we want to be mindful that, we want to just plug in areas where we needed to fill in and bring in our expertise and the experience that we have from different campaigns that we're working on. Our target from the beginning has been Senator Marco Rubio and, making sure that he stands in that protects the integrity of the original bill that came out of the Gang of Eight. Some of the comments, some of the rhetoric that he's been saying and some of the interviews that he's been going, you'll see him sort of kind of moving back a little bit in the sense of border security, increasing the amount of border security that they already have on the bill, and we want to make sure that we address that. So we've been doing a few different things. One of those, we started running a radio ad down in Miami in the Spanish radio to start getting some calls to his office and asking regular people to call his office to make sure that he stands solid in the position of the original Gang of Eight bill. The other thing is this is a number of different rallies that we've been participating on, as well as you know, a campaign that we're working on, and we're probably going to be seeing it starting next week, which is called Faces of Florida, where we're going to be highlighting different stories for immigrants from different backgrounds. We want, you know, the public in Florida to realize of the multitude of backgrounds from immigrants here in the country. We want them to learn about the stories, to realize that, just like Jose La Luz was saying, that there's something very wrong has to be happening in their countries for them to make this choice and come to the United States. So we want to make sure that we highlight those. You know, we're working with many different groups. There is a group of a network of nuns and nuns on the bus that's actually going to be doing a rally in Tallahassee tomorrow. And they're also going to be part of one of our media teleconference that we're going to be doing. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to give them a little plug that the event is going to be tomorrow, Tuesday, June 4th at 9 a.m. And it's going to be the First Presbyterian Church. And the address is 110 North Adams Street, Tallahassee. And so anybody of the show, they can go there. That will be a good opportunity to learn. Once again, you know, we're trying to maintain pressure on Senator Marco Rubio to stand strong with the original bill.
Well,
so just some of the small things that we're doing.
And just a couple of things. First, Pablo, we'll give you a chance to give out that information about the event tomorrow. And you don't have to apologize for the plug. It's a little more than a coincidence that we've got you on the program tonight here in Tallahassee with that event coming up tomorrow. You know, a big reason for this program is to bring people, you know, some awareness about what's happening and most importantly, how they can plug in. I want to ask a little bit about this the Faces project that you've been working on. We spoke with the last guest a little bit how, you know, so many people that fit into this undocumented status that are currently, you know, suffering under this system, working in the shadows. They have no rights. They're being abused in the workplace and can be deported and run off anytime they complain. What have you been finding working with this project in terms of the diversity of who those people really are?
Well, and I can tell you that there are people from all over the world. And, you know, of course, you know, being Florida, we do have a big majority of them being Latino descent or from Latin American countries. But the reality is that we find Haitians, Asians, and everything in between. But it's really, really heartfelt to listen to their stories, you know, the things that they go through. We were actually just in Apopka over a Saturday. We were actually doing an immersion trip there. And we heard the story from one of the Haitian farm workers of, you know, him getting in a boat with no motor and, you know, taking a trip from hoping to get to Florida, ended up going to Cuba because of weather, turned back after 6 months, and ended up having to go again. So actually it took him three times just to get to this country. So, you know, the stories that you hear are just unbelievably heartfelt and, you know, just show the reality of the struggles that people have to go through just make it here and how difficult it is. But we do want to make sure that we have a mix of different stories from not only different backgrounds, but also from different nationalities as much as we can get, because once again, these are people that are offering to share their stories. Not everybody feels comfortable. You know, once again, this is people that for the longest been in the shadows, and, you know, have suffered so much that they're still kind of afraid of coming forward and sharing the story with us.
You mentioned an immersion event in Apopka. Tell us about that, because I want to try to provide as much context about what people are doing out there in the field to get this bill passed, to get comprehensive immigration reform in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we realized very early was also that we needed to do some internal education because just as anybody knows, I mean, we're well mixed. So we have people from all backgrounds as members of unions, and we wanted to provide a good avenue for them to share an experience of what farm workers go through. So with the help of the Hope Center and APOPCA, we brought together in Central Florida, LACLA, another group. We put together this immersion trip just Saturday, and we spent half a day picking corn and sort of seeing the struggles of the workers, the farm workers there, what they have to go through. And then the rest of the day, we spent in a discussion about immigration, you know, some of the folks sharing their stories. It was the farm worker that I just mentioned, also a dreamer, daughter of other farm workers, came to this country when she was 9 years old. And, you know, it's just unbelievable to hear their stories. But also Sister Ann, which is the one that heads the Hope Center there in Apopka. Talking to her and learning that she's been working in immigrant rights for the past 20 years and you know, working to also provide some sort of better means and stability for those farm workers and their families, providing so many different services there, and really being sort of like a some sort of hope, just like their name is. You know, this is what they provide. So it was an unbelievable experience, not only for myself, but for the group that was there.
All right, we're about to run out of time, but I do want to give you an opportunity to give those details about the event here in Tallahassee tomorrow one more time. And then also it'd be great if folks listening could maybe find some places on the web where they could figure out a way to become part of this fight, you know, actually become part of making history. It's not a tough thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So the event is tomorrow at 9 a.m., and it's going to be at the First Presbyterian Church. The address is 110 North Adams Street, Tallahassee. And you can find us in fightforflorida.com. That's our website, all the information, everything that's going on in terms of the campaign that we have in immigration reform is there. Also a number to call Senator Rubio's office and ask him to stand strong in supporting immigration in a path to citizenship as well.
All right, Pablo De Leon. Pablo, thanks so much for joining us. You all are doing amazing work. And the whole country is going to be much better for your efforts as soon as we get this thing through. So thank you very much for joining us. And we look forward to have you back for a report back in the next couple of weeks.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate you.
All right. All right. That does it for the Your Voice program this evening. Remember the website there, fightforflorida.com, fightforflorida.com. You can find out information about the event tomorrow at First Pres. First Presbyterian Church here in downtown Tallahassee, Nuns on a Bus. That's not my name. That's really what it's called. All the information from the guests that we had on this evening. I want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back next week. We'll shift focus again to state politics and issues and some of the things that are brewing and came out of the 2013 legislative session. Tomahawk Talk coming up in just a few minutes. Thank you all for listening. See you back here Friday morning for some drive time music.